6:02 on a Friday. Triple in for Tiffany Sports Radio, 99 a game. It's the morning shift, 3 hours of misinformation and hilarity.
Well, hey, Hunter, you are the fountain of misinformation because I'm a truth teller.
Oh, man.
Those that accuse you of misinformation, here's a little bit of advice from my Uncle Rob. Those that accuse you of misinformation are the ones perpetrating it. Just leave it at that.
Mike, I told you in the clocking in video that it wasn't if, it was how quickly did Rob Tribble go off the rails.
Yeah.
And he went off the rails literally.
I asked him this morning, Rob, like, you know, right when we rolled in the parking deck, said, how quickly does Rob go off the rails? He said, immediately. Immediately.
Rob is in
it usually happens quickly out the gate.
Of a corrective emotional
experience.
Yeah. So
there's somebody out there right now that is listening to us, and they're treating their radio the same way Geno Smith treated his tablet last night. I don't know if you guys saw that clip. He just headbutted it like 5 times, then slammed it down and broke it in half.
Geno's got an interesting look with his helmet off right now.
Yeah?
Yeah, he got an interesting look. I like Geno, though.
I'm so happy for him and what his career has done.
Oh, you know,
talk about sticking with it and then finally getting your deal, and he's played decently well.
Well,
it goes to my point yesterday where I was like, nobody wants to play quarterback for the Jets.
But
like, it's just not a good place to be.
But he's also, you're so right on that, but he's also, he's what's wrong with the NFL game right now. And sports in general, where we don't give time, and John Smoltz has said it time and time. Every time John Smoltz comes on a radio show, or every time I hear him interviewed, he says, had I pitched in today's era, I would have been, moved on and doing something else, because there's no patience and people have zero patience with players and coaches, et cetera. And Geno Smith is a perfect example. He was in a system that did him no favors in college as far as the NFL game. As far as the NFL game.
What do you mean by that?
I think the system. Well, it was completely different from when he went into New York.
No doubt about that.
And I think that system in college basically catered to the players and his skills to just win, and he didn't learn the game. And I don't think I think the helmets, headsets and the helmets now, yeah. I think it's going to be the best thing for development of young quarterbacks, because you can talk to them up to 15 seconds, and I hope that we see so less of the hurry up to the line and then stand and look for 30 seconds at play cards. And,
right.
and I hope that they talk guys through, what are you seeing? Hey, you see that two safety look?
That's like, a good point.
Like, I hope that there's really coaching until 15 seconds and then they go. But I just think Geno Smith could have been this in New York had they had patience, better coaches, better systems around it. Joel Klatt said the dumbest thing I've ever heard someone say about the NFL, and he said that coaching does not matter in the NFL. He said it on that little loudmouth guy on Fox's show that they give all the money to in the afternoons. And he goes, yeah, coaching doesn't matter. It's all about quarterbacks. Look at the quarterbacks that win. Look at Brady or Belichick without Brady. And there's a lot of truth to that, but there's so much wrong about that. Yeah, quarterbacks win, but the reality of the situation is they have to go and have the right coaches with them. You have to have...
Well, look at Baker.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, how about this one? Sam Darnold.
Yes.
How about that one?
Exactly.
That's
proof that coaching matters.
Thing I've ever heard.
And Mike, take it a step further. It's not just coaching. It's who the coaches put in those systems, like the strength and conditioning coaches and all these programs.
And that's what I've fought back against whatever Klatt is talking about, whatever his narrative is. I've fought back against that for years, to where I don't think people understand. And I say this to Falcons fans and just fans in general, how big development is in the NFL. Like, and I'm not talking about just, Rob, I'm not talking about from a cerebral perspective of reading defenses. Obviously, that's best for the quarterback. But these guys show up, and a lot of times it's like, well, you know, he'll fill out. He's a light, he's 20. He's 20 years old, like Kyle Pitts, prime example. 20 years old, he's going to hit another gear. Wait till... Like, if you don't continue to work out and do all the same things and keep the same guardrails that you had throughout that college program that was a year-round program that had somebody looking over your shoulder every step of the way, when you finish your season in the NFL in January and they say, hey, we'll see you in April, if you don't continue to do all those things that got you to that level, you're going to come into training camp and people are going to go, what's wrong with this dude? Like, why is he a step slow? Why is his team regressed? And there's usually a reason for that. So – yeah, development in all phases, not just reading defenses and stuff, is a massive part of what the NFL is and what some teams tend to get wrong. It's just, it's not as easy as saying, well, this guy was a bust, that guy was a bust. I talk about with the Jets all the time. Would you want, if you were the number one pick in the draft, would you want the Jets to select you at quarterback? Absolutely freaking not.
No. And no. Go look at last night's game, to your point. Geno Smith, a guy that was had a bad situation and then was able to develop with the right people around him and learning various systems. And then go to the other side, Brock Purdy. Who I watched Brock Purdy's whole career at Iowa State. I watched a lot of his games with Arch when we're on the road, Rob, and you know how that goes. And Brock Purdy was the last player drafted, and he is a freaking stud in the NFL. He made a throw last night to George Kittle in that corner of the end zone. It's a little bench route, corner route.
Made a couple of them,
and it's unbelievable. He is the product of he's got good players around him, but he's also got the best offensive coordinator in the NFL. And the best play caller in the NFL offensively right now, that's Kyle Shanahan. And that, look at the difference it made in the last Mr. Irrelevant. That's why when Joel Klatt says that stuff, I'm like, you can't believe the garbage that comes out of your mouth sometimes.
Well, and here's the thing, I'm not as big a Klatt hater as some, but it's he's out of pocket. And Rob, I think you'll agree with this. I think what Shanahan did with Brock Purdy is exactly what Arthur Smith thought he might be able to do with D. Ritty, the Cincinnati kid.
Right.
He's like, well, my offensive scheme will take over. And, I just need somebody to get the ball to where I want it to go. I don't necessarily need him to make all these reads. Remember we heard Ray McCloud talking about that this preseason. He's like, you know, the 49ers, it's different because we scheme up to get it to one guy. And in Atlanta, it's kind of like, hey, let's read the defense and let's see where the defense lets us go with it. And I thought that was very intriguing. I think that both styles can work, and obviously they have here recently.
Being reactionary, inflicting your will.
Yeah, but I think to the point, I think Kyle Shanahan does a good job of saying, look, Brock Purdy can get it from A to B, and he can do some things with his legs. He's a magician with his legs at times, and we'll see what happens when we roll it out there.
Well, that's what I hope that we see from Zach Robinson as he progresses, is the figure, taking what defense has given you and exploiting it. I think they did a good job on the last week on Thursday night of doing that. And you know what? They're banged up. Kirk's processing. His anticipation is there. They're giving us this. Let's let it eat. Let's call these plays to get all these guys in the ball. And I think it works. I think you can some guys overthink it, but I said to Arch the other day, and he didn't disagree with me, so it doesn't mean he necessarily agrees, but he didn't tell me I was an idiot. Which
he probably wasn't
lot.
Listening.
No, he was listening. We were making eye contact. We were on the plane. I got his attention.
Eye contact.
Well, I want to make sure he was listening.
You have a candle too?
No, we had Jake in between us, our engineer. So,
that's just good.
Yeah. But I said, I really do. The more and more I'm around the NFL game, the difference in 7-10 and 10-7 is coaching. Because I think there are some bad teams out there, but the reality is the games are too close, and the salary cap, the way it's structured, the teams are the talent is too close. I mean, there is just not a big difference. That's why there's so many close games. And I think coaching sometimes sets that apart. Yeah, X factors. But when you get the X factor like Patrick Mahomes, that's why you win 3 Super Bowls in 4 years.
Let's not bury the lead. Rob, how are you doing, man? You know what I mean?
I'm just fine. It was fun watching the NFL last Sunday. All those early games went down to the wire.
Yeah, they
now,
did.
That was
man.
Fun to watch. And that's what the NFL is now. It seems like it's completely up for grabs right now.
It really
even
does.
Your unbeaten teams don't look.
Same way.
Yeah, even your unbeaten teams don't look like they're perfect teams by any stretch.
When we get into college football later in the show, the question I was going to give y'all was, who is the most consistent team in college football? And I do not know the answer.
I don't think there is one.
I think it's Texas through 6 weeks. I think Texas is it so far.
I think that's.
We got to take into account schedule.
I was
going to
say.
Year,
I mean,
too.
I think that's hard to say at this point.
But here's the thing for me is even teams that have played some good teams have come back and had some hiccups with lesser teams, and I haven't really seen them do that yet. And that's to me why I hold them because Tennessee. I thought Tennessee was a world beater.
I expect the Texas to early beat Mississippi State last week
State's just not very good.
No,
I know, but that's what I'm saying. I expected it to be like a 30-point game at halftime. It just wasn't. Maybe my expectations were out of pocket. But
I think if Quinn Ewers was playing quarterback, probably.
Oh, here we go.
Well, right. Who was Texas played? Number 10 Michigan is clearly overrated. They're not what they were last year.
Michigan's still they're still good defensively. They're not.
Still good defensively.
Not, yeah, they're not. You're right. Their quarterback play is
Colorado
garbage.
Colorado State, Texas San Antonio, Louisiana Monroe, Mississippi State. Well, they're consistently beating mediocre teams and a pretty good victory on the road at Michigan. But yeah, we'll see.
They got Oklahoma see this
tomorrow. Yep.
Oh, I got a stat about when I make my pick. I got a stat about the Oklahoma game. You're gonna be like, I'm sorry, what?
All right, gonna come back. Falcons, Panthers. Don't overlook this one. And according to these numbers, the Falcons have actually gotten progressively worse. What does that mean? Coming up next in the morning shift, Sports Radio 99 a game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Falcons, Panthers, 425 Sunday up there in beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina. And Falcons are 3-2 in spite of the fact they're not running the ball or they're not stopping the run either. Two of the cardinal rules of football, gentlemen. And you can say they've gotten progressively worse as far as points allowed. 18 versus the Steelers, 21 versus the Eagles, 22 against the Chiefs, 24 against the Saints, and 30 against the Bucks. But you're sitting at 3-2. You're 3-0 in the conference, 2-0 in the division. Your only losses are to AFC teams. So work in progress, but, hey, it's good to be 3-2.
The point scored thing, you can throw that out personally. Thursday night game, short
rest.
Yeah,
you also have different calibers of offenses you're facing. But you're giving up a ton of rushing yards to every team you face, though.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about that. And I think part of that is how you're playing defense. Because you're keeping, but you're giving them looks.
Do you think it's schematic more than maybe limited personnel?
I think it's a combination of both. I think there is schematics that they have that are allowing teams to run. But I also think you miss Nate Landman. I just don't
see he's back though. At least he's practicing.
His window is open, and
what's the 21-day practice window? Yeah. Is what they call it.
And so I think he was limited yesterday in practice as well. And so there's a chance, yeah, he's back. And I don't know if you're going to have Troy Anderson this week at all. Today will be the day to tell because I don't think he practiced yesterday.
He's going to be that guy that's going to be injured his entire career, it seems like.
Yeah, it's definitely on that trajectory at this moment. But, I also think missing a Thursday night game after a physical game like you played with the Saints and having – where he had 17 tackles and he did bang his knee up a little bit. I kind of expected him to come back this week, but right now you don't necessarily see it. But to the run game, I just don't think the linebackers, I don't think you're doing a great job up front, but I also think your linebackers are doing a good job of shedding blockers. And I've said that like over and over again and getting off these blocks and making these tackles in a hole.
Yeah, but that's 5 yards downfield though. So you're giving about 5 yards.
But the problem is they're supposed to shed and get in there and fill that hole and those gaps. But I also think when you're playing these safeties back, Mike, that it's also daring teams to run on you.
Well, and I think we're missing one of the bigger points here, and it's not to me the point is not so much about what they can gain on the ground; it's what they can gain on the clock. Rob, you and I have not had a chance to talk about Alabama and Vanderbilt this past weekend, and obviously one of the crazier losses in Alabama history as the number one ranked team, you lose to Vanderbilt. Bama has never. From what I've heard, allowed any other team to possess the ball for more than 40 minutes. And Vandy had it for 42 minutes. 42 minutes this past weekend. If you look at what Carolina is and you look at what the possibilities are, no, they are not an elite offensive unit, right? No, their defense has struggled. They're one of the worst teams in red zone percentage in the league defensively, and they're one of the worst teams at pressure rate. In the league defensively, all right? So how do you go about a game plan if you're the Panthers going into this weekend, the quarterback play has been spotty, you're nicked up in the wide receiver core, you don't really know what you have, you use Chuba Hubbard, right? And you try to control the clock, and you try to get 5 and 6 yards at a time because that has happened to the Falcons numerous times this year where they cannot get off the field. And we know, especially before last Thursday, that time of possession has been the Achilles heel of this Atlanta team. So when we kind of look at this game and we look at it from that 10,000-foot view and say, man, how in the world could the Falcons lose to a team as bad as the Panthers? That's how. You run Chuba Hubbard and you run him 30 times and you keep Kirk Cousins and that offense off the field and don't allow them to get the ball rolling offensively to where the timing starts to sync up and they can make explosive plays. That's the blueprint. That's what Dave Canales is going to go into this game thinking that he can get done on the ground. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what the Falcons do to counter that defensively along the defensive line and with the banged up linebacking core.
And honestly, if you don't have Landman and Anderson, I think you bring Justin Simmons down in the box and let him play off some of the stuff we saw him do at Denver. He is very good in the box against the run game, or he was in the past. I'm not opposed to that, but you also have to do the little things. And I don't want to start throwing out cliche terms, but you have to do a good job on the edge of setting the edge and extending run plays. But I feel like a lot of the ways that we've been hurt the most is just right up inside.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And at times last week, it was interesting to me because obviously you knew Bertrand going into the game last week was going to see his most extensive time by far, and mm-hmm. he did. But
wasn't
it also
last week the first time any rookies have played this year? Aurora and
Bertrand has played, but not like the role he did last week. Like, he's been special teams and everything else, and obviously he was a featured piece of the defense last week. And Rook was definitely the first time that he had played any of the defensive linemen.
And he played well. I thought Rook played well.
Well, in fact, I heard his name three or four times indicates he was making an impact.
It's only a matter of time. Here's what I'll say, though. Bertrand, as part of this plan, it was like half of what you would have done with a Troy Anderson. And the other half, guys, they go into like this 6-1 spacing where you leave four defensive linemen in the game. All right, use a couple of outside linebackers, and then you use Caden Ellis kind of in the middle as like the first guy, the only guy that's at the linebacker depth. And then at the last minute, they did a nice job of kind of rolling Justin Simmons and Jesse Bates down into run support next to Caden Ellis. I thought it was a really good game plan as far as how they were going to defend the run last week. So it was like, hey, we're not just going to use apples to apples and put J.D. Bertrand where we would Troy Anderson. We'll do a number of different things. We'll use nickel personnel, and we'll, you know, use four defensive linemen and a lot of other things to kind of give different looks so they can't just attack J.D. Bertrand in coverage.
And 42 of their yards last week came on Baker Mayfield scrambles. And so if you go look, you gave up 160 yards. But if you and I know you can't, and I know it counts, but those are scrambles out of the pocket on passing plays. That they in reality, they allowed 118 yards if you take away that, which is would have been their best day all year against the run game,
yeah,
Mike.
For sure.
So, and Rob, Andy Dalton doesn't bring that. Yeah, he might get out every once in a while and get you 5-6 yards. I think in some ways he's probably a little bit better than Kirk at that, but not much.
How good has Hubbard been, though? He's pretty much a focal point of that offense. He's still averaging almost 6 yards a carry.
Yeah, he's got 400 yards, but just a hair under 400 yards for the season.
Back-to-back games, he had a 38-yard run against the Bears and the Bengals, so he can also get loose as well.
And they busted that right up the middle. But now they're down a couple offensive linemen.
Yep.
I think it's true. I think this game is going to be won. If the Panthers win this game, Mike nailed it. It's Chuba Hubbard. It's their run game. And then can they possess the ball? On the other side, though, the Falcons found something with the passing game and the way that they were able to cut the Bucks up, I should say, and carve them up in the passing game, where you were able to use that to possess the ball and keep them off the field. Baker Mayfield looked great last week. He was 19, I think, of 24 with 3 touchdowns. Only had 180 yards.
Yep.
And you talked about the scoring. I thought that was the style of game that it was, where they scored 30. You gave up 21 to Jalen Hurts and the Eagles offense, which even without A.J. Brown is still a pretty good offense.
They almost rushed for 200 yards. I'm just saying going forward, this has to be addressed, though, you know?
Well, it's the rushing. It's not the scoring for me.
Yep.
I think if you're giving up 20 points in that range a game, yeah, you should be okay.
I'm not overemphasizing, but it is a symptom, though. Hope you can clean up and get better at.
But I think you nailed it when you talk about the run game and the time of possession. Like, the run game is what's allowing them to eat you up, and that's why they're accumulating more points. Because you're bending, and you're not necessarily breaking. But they did break a little bit last week in the red zone. So I don't disagree. I just think you got to shut their run game down. That's where it worries me the most. I mean, we haven't seen a lot yet from Xavier Leggett. I mean, you might. He's a good rookie. If he can get going, but the other side, I'm not worried about balance as much as just scoring points.
Is this gonna be one of those? Seems like Falcons Panthers play those ugly, plotting, playing in mud up
9-12.
Yes, yes.
Please,
that's
no.
What it always feels like with these two teams.
No, thank you.
Well, to that point, though, we've played them in some – they had the Thursday night game in 22 where it was rainy, heavy rain, foggy, kind of not a good environment. Then you had last year, which was in December, rainy, foggy, overcast. Sunday's going to be 79 and sunny.
Well, look, and when we get to 7 o'clock and back to the Falcons discussion, I've got some stats of what the Falcons are the best at in the league and what the Falcons are the worst at in the league that kind of encompass what this game might be. But here's what I'll say. We talk about time possession, and you talk about gritty games. And, Rob, I think you're dead on. I think the worst thing you can do for a team like Carolina, especially when you look at their scoring margin this year, is to let them still have hope deep into the second half. Their scoring margin this year is the worst in the league.
Yep.
45 points to 105 points in the first half is the worst margin in the league this year, right? They've given up 105 points in the first half and have only scored 45. If you get to the second half and they feel like they're still in it, that's a completely different ball game for Carolina right now.
And that's playing clean football. If they turn the ball over, score 7, not 3. If you get down in the red area, don't have a big penalty. The one thing that Arch says, he said so many times to me in games, you can't let them hang around. Do not let – if you have an opportunity early in this game to put your foot on their throat, you better do it with full force. Do not let a team like Carolina hang around.
And you got to be careful, too. Andy Dalton's been around. He's seen about everything you can see on a football field, and he can beat you if you mess around.
Well, we mentioned it yesterday, Rob. People don't understand. He's the same age as Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
Like, he's the same age.
If you play that off coverage, Mike, and you let him just dink and dunk, he's gonna take full advantage of it.
All right, here we go. Week 7, college football tomorrow. Big game out there in Oregon. That might be the biggest one. Georgia, it's going to be Bulldog-on-Bulldog action in Athens. Georgia Tech heading up to Chapel Hill. Getting some college football coming up next in the morning shift, Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Star brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Nice pull, Dylon. Little 80s alternative rock from the Cult, bruh.
You never know what Dylon – like, sometimes Dylon just has his throwaway bumper music. And then sometimes he just pulls one out, and you're like, man, where'd this come from?
It's a total banger.
I got to go back there and just check, like, his screen and just see if there's just, like, a quick play button, and then there's, like, a whole catalog.
There's already songs loaded in there.
Yeah.
There's songs, because I've obviously done that. I've been back there before. I can tell you that song was already loaded for Dylon, and he just said, oh, okay.
That sounds good.
They haven't told me I can't play this song, so I'm just going to let it go.
The secret is there's no secret. I literally just go through our music catalog that's in here. Now, sometimes I will pull specific songs, obviously, but a lot of times I'm just pull a random song from what's already loaded into our wide orbit system, and I pop it in, and a lot of times I don't even know what song I'm playing, but I hope you guys like it.
And I know, with all due respect, I can assure you that he did not know what song that was playing. Am I?
You are absolutely correct on that.
I just don't think
that's okay. Though.
I don't. Yeah. Well,
he's a young man. He doesn't know.
That's not a hate thing. Yeah. Sometimes you can tell the truth without it being disrespectful. You know, it wasn't meant in any way.
Not in this day and age.
I don't feel disrespected at all, Squid Billy. Rest assured, I don't feel disrespected at all.
Oh man, I've been having that conversation a lot this week with my Alabama friends. Well, some of the digital I've been doing, man, it's been crazy, some of the back and forth. That there is a 5%, Rob, of the Bama fan base that is in flames right now, man. And there seems to be 90% that are just like, yeah, man, we lost. It is what it is. So,
I guess it's probably the breakdown discipline, the temper tantrums on the field. This, you know, that was would that have happened under Nick?
So that's actually been a big topic for some of the digital and the pods I've been doing this week. And the answer is, in a smaller portion, yes.
Yeah.
You know, you had times where guys threw tantrum on the sideline or got in an argument. Devontae Smith punched somebody in the middle of a game.
That happens. You know?
I don't think you would have. I don't think it would have quadrupled down the way it did, where you threw a mouthpiece and kicked the ball and slammed a guy's hat and then refused to field. The problem is that it. I don't know that you would have gone without a suspension for Malachi Moore this week, the way that you might have had it been under Nick.
Well, you know what. Different situation, but Jermaine Burton did punch an individual after a game and play the next week.
I know. And that's my point.
A fan, by the way. A fan. He cold-cocked a fan and play the next week. So under Nick Saban. So let's not act like Nick Saban was.
Do you mind if I finish? Can I finish the statement? My point is that all the stuff that Malachi did, it wasn't just, if he just throws the mouthpiece, nothing happens. If he just kicks a football, probably nothing happens. If he just slams the guy's head, probably nothing happens. You put four of them together, and I have a hard time with the fact that maybe nothing happens.
Well, he's having a toddler tantrum on the field.
And the other thing is, this is the first year, and this is the other part. This is the first year Nick never did this. He didn't do captains before the year. Always did it after the year. And this is why, because Malachi Moore is a fifth-year player wearing a C on his chest, right? And that's kind of a big deal. Like, you're the captain of the team throwing the tantrum. So that's a whole other aspect to it. I'm not going to sit here and say that this doesn't happen under Nick Saban or wouldn't have happened under Nick Saban. I just think that when you look at everything around Malachi, the response would have been different under Nick Saban. Man, you know, we'd have handled it internally. We'd have done all this other stuff. Kalen DeBoer has been very passive about it. And I think that for a lot of Alabama fans, it's been kind of hard to swallow, to be honest with you. So there's a number of different ways to look at it. It's not perfect. I think that a lot of people around that program just, hey, let's move on.
I think sometimes people forget what things that happen under certain people, and then they just, that's their fallback because they're scared. And I understand Alabama fans are scared. I don't mean it negatively, but they're scared they're not going to have the success under Kalen DeBoer. Because it's natural. When you lose something like, you don't think Patriots fans aren't scared they're never going to have any like long-term success again like they did under Bill Belichick?
Oh, yeah. I think that ship has sailed under Belichick a couple of years ago.
But the reality is that you as fans, you worry, you get scared, you get spoiled by your riches, and when the fear of being broke is there, Alabama fans have experienced it. They went through that era in the late 90s to early 2000s where they weren't very good.
No, and to your point, and you guys will probably follow along with me, because one of the problems I have had, now the Malachi Moore situation is separate. Would that have happened under Nick? Would it not have? Would he have refused to leave the field? That definitely wouldn't have happened under Saban. He would have lost his mind. He refusing to get off the field, he's been taken out of the game. But I think the whole thing where this Vanderbilt loss would have never happened under Nick, I think that's completely misplaced. Because I mean, I looked at a team playing a 6-5 Auburn last year that had to convert a 4th-and-31 right, at the end of the game. I looked at a team that went on a road to South Florida and won by like 10 points.
Well, Saban lost to what, Louisiana Monroe?
Yeah, I happened to be there for that one, Rob. Thank you for bringing up that.
Saban never faced a Vanderbilt like that.
No, and that's really the conversation that I think is worth talking about that game last week. Yes, it's Vanderbilt. Yes, that has not happened. Vanderbilt's never beaten number one team. Vanderbilt didn't just bring in a transfer portal quarterback. They brought in his offensive coordinator. They brought in they brought in Jerry Kill and Tim Beck and surrounded him with everything he had at New Mexico State that was good, and just said, let's just do it here in a different uniform. It wasn't learning a new system.
Well, more times than not, teams like that, they can match you 22-on-22. Yeah.
Well,
and it's the depth that usually
I put out
this team.
The digital I'm doing, Rob, I put out a podcast last Thursday, and the headline of this podcast was Vanderbilt can beat Alabama. And it got laughed out of comment sections. Like, y'all are crazy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, I'm just telling you, I've watched this team. They are efficient.
Yeah.
And efficiency in college football can beat teams with more talent when the talent doesn't always play up to its level.
Well, it shows you how crazy college football is. Vanderbilt came here and lost to Georgia State, but they beat Virginia Tech, who everyone thought was.
And they should have beaten Missouri.
Yes.
You ain't watched the Missouri game. They should have beaten Missouri.
I don't think Missouri's that good either. I think when you go down to it, but see, if you're mad at your team, if you're an Auburn fan, you're like, see, we should have had Pavia, or if you're another team that's quarterback situation, just remember, most likely your coach wasn't going to be willing to do what Clark Lee did, which was bring in Jerry Kill and Tim Beck and just say, do a makeover of what our team is offensively to fit what Pavia's strengths are. Let's go win football games.
Yeah.
It was a bloodbath in the top 10 last week, though, wasn't
it? Dude, I've never seen anything like it.
Tennessee.
I honestly think that Alabama. In a lot of ways, and y'all probably tell me I'm wrong, I think in a lot of ways Tennessee fans might have had a worse week because of what that program's been and kind of on the upswing. And then it just straight up looked like you got out physical. Like, it felt like Arkansas bullied Tennessee when you look at offensive line and defensive line.
Well, Sam Pittman saved his job for now because of that.
For sure.
I think he saved his job for at least for a couple years.
I think he saved it at least for another year.
And Nico didn't look like the player he looked before. And that's
freshman growing pains.
But It's just when I see a player hang on to the ball, it might be fresh from growing pains, but the coaching's got to come into play. But you got to be in that guy's ear, especially now more than ever, when you can be in their ear up to 15 seconds to go into play. Be like, no matter what happens, put the ball in the end zone. No matter what happens, throw that ball.
I think situational, to Rob's point, I think situational football is a freshman growing pains thing. But even just operationally, when you look at what was happening to Tennessee, the interior of Tennessee's offensive line was awful at times against Arkansas. And you just did, and I think that is such a head nod to Sam Pittman and the culture he has brought to Arkansas, where they play tough, man. They don't they're not always the best team, and they're going to struggle. And I think their win total was like 3.5 this year, right? I mean, it was something really, really low, maybe 4.5. But they play hard. And when you do that and you play against a quote-unquote, and I hate this word, but when you play against teams that are more finesse, that are kind of schematically over you, that's what can happen sometimes. In
Arkansas,
the trenches,
like Kentucky,
in the interior.
You think kind of in that kind of feisty,
they are
physical
Sam Pittman.
Way.
Yeah, yeah. I think Sam Pittman brings an edge where those guys are like, look, man, we might get beat, and we might get the crap beat out of us, but I'll be danged if we're not going to go down swinging and throwing haymakers.
What do you think about that? What Oregon's going to show up? Because Oregon has been pretty.
Their offensive line's been really banged up.
And you cannot, I mean, whatever you think about Ohio State.
They've been on cruise control.
Well,
what,
yeah.
Akron,
but
Western Michigan, Marshall.
Yeah, but, I mean.
Iowa scored one touchdown in the past 3 years.
But all that said, Ohio State is normally pretty good in the trenches. And if you come, you play Oregon, and they're not very good in the trenches. I mean, I know it's at Autzen Stadium, which is going to be different for Ohio State. That's a crazy atmosphere now.
Yeah, yeah. Y'all tell me if I'm wrong. I said this conversation yesterday. I think Ohio State, because of the money now, because of NIL and that money that's going around college football, I think Ohio State's the college football version of the Yankees now.
Yeah.
Where they're spending a lot of money, and you just hope they get beat. You're like, dude, y'all are going to have
What's
a lot
their
of fans.
Payroll, 20 million?
Right, yeah. A lot of fans, but everybody that's not a Yankees fan is absolutely rooting against the Yankees. And I feel like it's the same. If you're not an Ohio State fan right now, it's not like, well, it's going to be a good game. It's, I hope Ohio State gets the crap beat out of them in this game. And it comes all down to the zeros. It feels like they're throwing out.
Good for the players getting paid, but the spirit of college football, the soul of it is rotted.
Well, they got to fix it, man.
The Big Ten actually
gotta fix it.
Stood up for it. Actually stood up for college football. They don't want to do these private equity things.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong with private equity? Institutions, entities that don't build anything. They just prey upon everyone else. All right, Falcons, you got some numbers?
I got some numbers. I'm going to tell you what the Falcons are the best at in the league and what they're the worst at in the league. And maybe how Carolina matches up against both of those things, Rob.
All right, that's coming up next in the morning shift. Got Triple In for Tiffany. And by the way, Falcons fly over Sunday night after hopefully what will be a win in Charlotte. We're the flagship station of the Atlanta Falcons. Sports Radio, 929 The Game.